SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Excuse me. And John White is going to join us first as we work our way into hour three. Thanks to Charlie Hayward. I'll send out that link. You got to read the. It's brief. It's just three or four paragraphs. And you know, most recently, I've talked about thoroughbredracing.com. A couple times, most recently when Dan Ross has had some pieces, but it's a fun stop. It very thoughtful. There's no histrionics and no agendas, and well worth visiting. Do a little bit of everything, but it's got a very international approach. And the commentary is, let's all try to live up to the high standards set by the remarkable Rick Violette. Oh, thanks to Charlie. As I mentioned, tomorrow, Joe Applebaum, Pat Kelly, Jerry Bailey. As we appreciate Rick. The information, as I'm just waiting for an answer on which direction we're going. John White, I think, is going to join us first as we, as the Gordon Elliott watch continues. All right, we'll get him. We'll get him at some point. He said he was happy to do it. I saw him after they won the Grand National, and it sure looked, if you follow Gordon on Twitter, he clearly enjoyed and the Irish, all the lads that were in attendance. They clearly enjoyed themselves because there's a few tweets of. And also from British media that made the trip. I don't know if you saw. I think it's the Daily Mail. They've got about a 5-minute video of some of the infield hijinks at Far Hills, which, you know, depending on. Not everybody will watch the video and see it as a huge invite. Basically, it's the college kids that are in attendance, enjoying themselves. And there is an infield. There's the hillside parking, where you got the natural bowl, and then there's an infield that the course rings and. When the kids come in from the city on the train and they walk up, you know, to that infield ring, especially after what happened weather-wise with plenty of wet muddy areas, it's got a bit of a Preakness feel. It's got a bit, without a doubt, there's some high spirits. So if you, if Guy Torsiglieri wants me retweeting that link. No, it's wholesome fun. John White joins us. John, you can appreciate. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. We're excited here with the Los Angeles Dodgers taking on the Boston Red Sox tonight in Game 1 of the World Series. Dodgers back in the World Series this year after a tough defeat in last year's World Series against the Astros, and looking forward to it. Two outstanding pitchers going tonight in Kershaw and Sale, so should be a lot of fun. Two historic ballparks, Fenway Park and Dodger Stadium, so for baseball fans like yours truly, I got to grow up in Spokane, Washington when the Los Angeles Dodgers AAA Farm Club was there, and Tom Lasorda was the manager, and Steve Garvey and Bill Russell and that whole gang played for the, when I was a kid, I'd get to go out to the ballpark and watch future Los Angeles Dodgers people that you knew were going to eventually make their way up to the big club, because back then the farm system really was a farm system, unlike today where they kind of scatter all over the place. But and I would listen to Vin Scully on KFI radio with my little transistor radio at my pillow at night, and listening to Bill Singer and Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale and pitchers like that. So I'm really excited about the World Series kicking
nice.
Off tonight.
Was that the Rainiers? Where were the Rainiers, or are there Rainiers?
There were Seattle Rainiers over in the Pacific Coast League, yeah. But the Spokane Indians, they were the
okay.
Maury Wills played
wow.
there for them, and I mean, I remember Willie McCovey coming in for the Tacoma Giants before he got called up to the San Francisco Giants. That Pacific Coast League was a pretty salty league back in those days, I can tell you. And you'd see a lot of future players. In fact, one year, there was some kind of a contractual thing or quirk or whatever, but Roy White of the New York Yankees played one year for the Spokane Indians, led the league in hitting, and I became a huge Roy White fan watching him hit all the time. That guy was a pure hitter. He was fantastic. So, like I say, as a baseball fan, I was mainly a racing fan and a basketball fan, but I was also a baseball fan and continue to be so today. And, you know, the Dodgers, it was pretty good for them to get back to the World Series. It wasn't easy. They had to win a Game 7 there to get in there. And with and ironically, Kershaw won at Santa Anita Saturday. And on a day where early speed was really was king. I'm not a big track bias guy, as I've said many times on your show, but that track at Santa Anita Saturday sure seemed to strongly favor front runners, and Kershaw got the job done. And then later in the evening, Kershaw pitched the ninth inning to get the clinch the game and send the Dodgers on to the World Series. And I really respected Milwaukee. I'll tell you what, they're a good ball club. I mean, that I thought that all year, and I thought they were going to be very, very tough. And Boston, I mean, going back to when I was in Las Vegas last August and bet on McKenzie at 30-1 for the Breeders' Cup Classic, I also bet the Los Angeles Rams at 9-1 to win the Super Bowl. I don't think you're going to get any 9-1s on them right now. And I really thought that, you know, Milwaukee was a team that was going to be tough, but I considered Boston to be the best team in baseball back in August. In fact, when I was in Vegas, they swept the New York Yankees, and I did pretty good because Boston was actually an underdog at home in one of those games, and I thought, man, how often do you get the best team in baseball, especially at home, as an underdog? So, and then the Yankees went out to an early lead in the first inning. I thought, well, so much for that handicapping, but Boston ended up winning the game and winning easily. So it's going to be exciting for those of us in Los Angeles. We've got the Rams undefeated. We got the Dodgers in the World Series. And, of course, LeBron James is here, but he choked at the free throw line last night. So we kind of got to get LeBron over the hump here and see if we can get a W for the Lakers, as they haven't been able to win a game yet. But they're a work in progress, the Lakers. It's still exciting to have one of the greatest players of all time playing for the Lakers. And you figure that in a matter of time, they'll be able to kind of right the ship there. They're certainly more exciting to watch now than they have been for quite some time.
The the racing, there's a racing tie to the Dodgers too. That for those that if you haven't necessarily paid attention or National League fan per se, but Walker Buehler is from Lexington and was an absolute star at Henry Clay and then later at Vanderbilt, and he started Game 7, pitched very well.
He sure
didn't
did.
Get the win.
How exciting is it to have him? Boy, to me, I'm so impressed with him. I mean, wow, that's huge for that team. I mean, considering how young he is, what the future he has, so if he can just stay sound, it's sort of like pitchers that are very much like these racehorses. They seem to be very fragile. Like Charlie Whittingham used to say, they're like strawberries. They can spoil overnight. Pitchers kind of tend to be that way, too. Remember when I was a kid and watching Mark Fidrich, the bird, pitch on Monday Night Baseball, and that guy's hat would fall off half the time, and I thought, man, how long is that guy's arm going to last? I mean, he just was so hard with his throwing motion and everything. He was exciting, and he was a very good pitcher, but I thought it was only a matter of time before he was going to have arm problems.
Well, the nice Buehler, it's got to be hard for him because he's been a regular at Keeneland growing up, and being into the postseason. If he's going to be in postseason, he's not going to be able to go in the fall, and he can't go in the spring. He can't go in April anymore. So Walker, I don't know. I guess the Dodgers are going to have to get knocked out before Walker is going to get a chance to go back to Keeneland anytime soon. Maybe Breeders' Cup when it comes back. That's probably the next chance he'll get to go to. Yeah, but the only reason I'm interested actually is because of him, and we'll root on. I'm a National League guy anyway, but we'll root the Dodgers into this.
One thing I think that helps the Dodgers, this 2-3-2 format, to me, I've always felt that puts the pressure on the home team, because if the Dodgers could come out of Fenway with a split, then you come back for three games at Dodger Stadium. See, and this came into play with the Milwaukee series. I mean, if you can, Dodgers lost that game one, but they got the split out of Milwaukee. That used to be the way in the NBA. I mean, I think a much fairer seven-game series is when you go 2-2, 1-1-1. But that when you do that 2-3-2, boy, I mean, you've got to hold serve at home. Or, you know, when you get that split and then you go to the other team's field or court for three straight games, boy, then the pressure's really, I mean, Boston could really have the pressure on them if the Dodgers are able to win either of these first two games at Fenway. So, and I certainly don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities at all. Chris Sale's a big question mark, you know, late in the season. He's a tremendous pitcher, you know, and Kershaw himself has not been Mr. Playoffs throughout his career, but he's done better this year to me. I mean, you know, he's been not to where he's been absolutely knocked around like he has been in some of these years. So so that's a big key tonight to me is Sale. He's coming off the stomach ailment and so forth, and he's fresh. But, you know, those pitchers, were kind of like racehorses, that they'd like to get on a schedule and kind of keep the schedule. The whole team, you know, Boston, you know, the fact that they're coming in here not really where the Dodgers are coming in with more recent playing, I think, is a little bit of a help, too. But then you factor in the cold weather. There's all kinds of aspects of this game tonight. So you got two of the premier franchises, really, in all of baseball with the Red Sox and the Dodgers. So it's, to me, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, should be good. I am interested. John, let's follow up on our conversation from last week and got a big reception. People enjoyed the discussion point about the favorites, the likely favorites. We hit some of the most logical and some of the highest profile divisions in terms of likely favorites and short prices. Let's keep up on that front and get a feel as well for, you know, what you've noted here since we talked last week, and you know what as the fields didn't morph all that much. There wasn't actually as much volatility in terms of horses being declared out and not participating as we do get in some years. It was very stable leading up to yesterday's pre-entry.
That's true. Although we're still at that stage, even with the pre-entries, the things
sure.
can change dramatically, as we know. I mean, color up to entry time. I mean, I'll never forget Beholder when she was a two-year-old, and everybody kept telling me she was going to run in the juvenile sprint and right to that morning. And, in fact, Mandela had said it, like, practically that morning. And then I get in to do the morning lines for the Breeders' Cup. The first race they hand me was the juvenile sprint, and Beholder wasn't in it. So, I mean...
That's true. I remember that. That's right.
Going, oh, this is a nice way to kick off the Breeders' Cup. I mean, you know, because the thing that I was hoping she'd be in the juvenile sprint was that was already a very, very tough juvenile fillies that year, and you know, you threw her back in the mix, and I mean, it made a tough race even tougher. So, fortunately, one thing I've learned about that, you better be ready with those backup plans, you know, to be able to fly at the seat of your pants, which is kind of a shame for because these are such important races, but it just comes with the territory. But speaking of the two-year-olds, a couple of the races we didn't talk about last week were the juvenile mm-hmm. and the juvenile fillies. And as far as if I were to make the line right now on kind of, you know, roughly, because we don't know the exact field size again, we don't know who's in the race, so these are just rough estimates. But Game Winner to me is a horse that is probably going to get bet pretty heavily. I mean, you've got the Baffert factor, the undefeated factor, the strong buyer speed figure factor. I mean, there's just so much going for this Candy Ride colt here. I think he's going to get bet heavy, and it just depends on, I mean, if it's a 14-horse field, it makes it very tough to make a 9-5, 2-1 favorite. So if it is 14, which it sounded like yesterday from Rick Hamberly in your discussion, it probably will oversubscribe, then even a 5-2 favorite in a 14-horse field is pretty high because you're divvying up that pie, and it's tough for those percentage points when you're divvying up among 14 betting interests. So, but whatever the case, I think Game Winner is going to be a pretty solid favorite here. Now, Complexity also certainly is going to get his share of support, and deservedly so, because he's undefeated for Chad Brown and looked very good winning the Champagne, but he'll be going two turns for the first time. But that said, he's got back-to-back good buyers in 1994, so, I mean, he's obviously the real deal, and he's going to get plenty of respect, and he should. And then I think after the big two there, you're going to jump up a bit to Code of Honor, who, to me, I think he's a very live candidate to maybe win the race. Who knows how good this colt is? I mean, his race and defeat in the Champagne was fantastic, I thought. I mean, stumbling so bad at the start and the trip he had, wide trip. And, I mean, boy, to run second when he had gone wire to wire in his debut sprinting, I mean, he could be anything that colt. So, and he's in the outstanding hands, of course, of Hall of Famer Shug McGahee. So I think he's very dangerous. I would see him around the 6-1, 8-1 area. Again, if it's 14 horses, though, then you got to kind of push everything up a bit. And then you've also got Gunmetal Gray and Mind Control, or a couple of others that I think kind of go in that maybe the next group after Code of Honor, maybe 8-1, 10-1, 12-1-ish. You know, Gunmetal Gray, I think, is a very nice colt, but he just got his clock kind of cleaned by Game Winner, and that race is sitting there for everybody to see. On the other hand, I mean, Gunmetal Gray's improving. He had a 59 buyer in his debut, an 89 in his maiden win, and then a 90 in the American Pharoah. So, you know, I think he's still, someone that could make a lot of noise in this race. But you start with Game Winner, and he's going to be very tough. And, I mean, really when you get down to it, you have to kind of think – I think that he's one of the more probable winners of the entire Breeders' Cup. We were last week trying to color them either, vulnerable or dependable. And to me, when you consider it's Baffert and how well Baffert does when he ships and how well Baffert's done at Churchill Downs, I got to make Game Winner one of the more reliable, at least going into the Breeders' Cup.
Well, and just looking using last year as a juxtapose, Bolt Doro went off at 70 cents. And then you jumped up to Free Drop Billy and U.S. Navy flag went off at 770? That's interesting.
How many were in that race? What was the field?
12. They ended up with 12.
A big field, yeah.
7:30 on Free Drop and 770 on U.S. Navy flag. 980 on Soleimani was the fourth choice. Those were the only horses under 10-1. And then you went to Firenze Fire, 1140, and then Good Magic, 1150.
Well, like I say, I mean, Bolt Doro was coming off that, somewhat controversial because there was the controversy with the buyer speed figure and the front runner, which is now the American Pharaoh. But he was so impressive in that race. He was undefeated going into the Breeders' Cup, and he had the look of, maybe a superstar going into the Breeders' Cup. And obviously with the ability of 2020 hindsight, we can say he was overbet. But I remember thinking going into the race that he was one of the more probable Breeders' Cup winners. I mean, that's how he looked going into the Breeders' Cup. And Good Magic stepped up. I mean, he made history winning the race. He was the first maiden to ever win the Breeders' Cup juvenile. So but like I say, I think Game Winner is going to be a solid favorite here. I mean, think of how much Bolt the Oro got bet, and that was with Mick Ruiz training. Now you've got Baffert trading the favorite. So, and we know how Baffert, and there's a reason Baffert draws play. He wins these big races. He's a two-time Triple Crown winning trainer, and he's won three Breeders' Cup Classics. And I mean, there's a reason that. When you look at a really good horse from the Baffert barn like this colt obviously is, he stepped up and won that Del Mar Futurity and proved that was no fluke by, very impressively winning the American Pharaoh. And one thing, you can go to XBTV and see these workouts, and he's looked good in his workouts. So, it seems like it's all systems go for him. And so I think he'll be, the thing is, if you like somebody to beat Game Winner, even Complexity, you're probably going to get some pretty good value in terms of if Game Winner gets bet heavily like I think he will be, that pushes everybody else up.
The interesting middle prices are at least my slight interest. I'm kind of excited for Kathleen O'Connell and her opportunity with Well Defined, and he's going to come in completely, as one of those Calder-esque type horses, and they've got, there's really only Awesome Feather to, to really hang your hat on as a win candidate per se. But I'm confident she'll come in and run well with Well Defined. I just think very highly of Kathleen and would like to see her do well on this stage. Let's look at the Phillies, John, and Bellafina, Serengeti Empress, Restless Rider, those three. Then I suppose Sipican Harbor, Jaywalk with the late effort here, moving toward this opportunity. This will be an interesting board, and it doesn't look like there's going to be more than eight or nine in here.
And you're right. I think it will be an interesting board. I think it'll be an interesting race. This looks like a real quality group, a two-year-old fillies that we have at this point. Because Bellafina, has rattled off three consecutive graded stakes wins, including the back-to-back grade ones. people were knocking her Del Mar debutante, but that was more of a function of the surface that day. I mean, I wasn't surprised at all to see her come back off of that and run like she did in the Chandelier. I mean, this is a case where I think people kind of didn't get the clue of what kind of surface, how tiring and slowish that was at Del Mar that day, particularly in the stretch. I mean, it was like they hit quicksand in the stretch. And visually, it looked that way. They were struggling. And the key was, I mean, this wasn't like it was only Bellafina struggling. That whole field looked like they were struggling, Mother and everybody. And Bellafina did not look that way when she won the Sorrento. She got a 94 buyer in the Sorrento. And you rarely see someone like a filly like this go from a 94 to a 75 and still win by daylight. I mean, that in and of itself kind of tells you what kind of track that was that day at Del Mar. And she came back and almost got back into the 90s again in the Chandelier with an 89, but did it with such authority. I mean, she bounded home, really with good gusto in that race. And Simon Callahan has made the statement. I mean, he made the statement well before the Chandelier that this is the best filly he's ever trained. And he was the original trainer of Abel Tasman. So, I mean, that kind of tells you something right there. I mean, this guy knows a really good horse when he has one, and this is a really good filly. I mean, there's just no getting around it. But the Serengeti Empress, we've talked about her. When you win the Pocahontas, she only got a 78 buyer, but like I've said, you can't knock her too much for that from the standpoint when you win by almost 20 lengths. I mean, what do they expect her to do, win by 40? I mean, she won by a pole, so... once you're that far in front, I'm not going to hold the time against her too much. I mean, because, like I say, they're not running against the clock. So it wasn't like Lannery's going to sit there and say, we need to run faster, so I better try to win by 30 or 40. I mean, that's just, you got to look at the context of the race. And it's not like this came out of left field. She looked so good at Ellis romping in that race. So this is a really nice filly in her own right. And Tom Amos is another guy. This guy's been in the game his whole life. And he's talked up this filly like she's really something special. And then we go on to Restless Rider. And Ken McPeak has said this is like the best filly he's had since Take Charge Lady and is in the same league as Take Charge Lady. And that's saying a lot. And I was talking up Restless Rider clear back after her debutante on your show when she got stopped cold going into the far turn and still won by over 11. Now, how often do you see that in a 6-furlong race? I don't mean like steady slightly or check a little or something. She got stopped completely and restarted and won by over 11 lengths and broke the stakes record in a race that's been run for over 100 years. So that filly... I was disappointed when she didn't win the Spinaway, but she sure looked good winning the Alcibiades, and McPeak's had his eye on this Breeders' Cup all along as the main goal and to have her at her peak for this. So, and McPeak is very good at doing that. And the filly that I think is going to be kind of a wise guy filly here, and I think this could be a very special filly too, is Jaywalk. I'm starting to sense kind of a real groundswell of some support for her. So I think she's one that could really get some play in here, too. My preliminary kind of looking at the prices, I would make Bellafina around 2-1, 5-2, especially since, as you say, this isn't going to be a 14-horse field. So you can kind of go around 2-1, 5-2 pretty comfortably. Then with Serengeti Empress, maybe 3-1, 7-2-ish. Restless Rider 3-1, 7-2-ish, and I think Jaywalk maybe, like I say, I think I would be almost tempted to try to make her as low as a 4-1 because I think she's going to get play here. There's a buzz kind of growing about her, and when I kind of sense a buzz horse, I like to kind of make sure that I don't get kind of caught with your pants down if you're making the line and have her like 8-1 or something like that, and she ends up opening on the board at 5-2 or something. I mean, it looks a lot better if you've got her 4-1 and she happened to draw a lot of early play and she's 5-2 than if you got her like 6 or 8. And Sipican Harbor is another one in here too. I mean, this is a nice, this is really a good group of 2-year-old fillies so this year. So You hit it. I'll be very interested in the betting on this race. It should be an interesting board, and I'm also very interested in the race. I think it should be a very interesting race. I think whoever wins this is going to be, you know, certainly a very serious filly. That not only because we've had some pretty weak Breeders' Cup juvenile fillies in, you know, recent years. There's been some strong ones, but we've had some pretty weakish ones too. And going in, I certainly think this is a very strong one.
There's something that just caught my eye looking at this race that I don't know how usual or unusual it is. There's only one colt, only one male that's got three wins, and that's Game Winner, 3 for 3. You look at the fillies, though. Bellafina's got three wins. Jaywalk's got three wins. Restless Rider's got three wins. Serengeti Empress has got three. You got four fillies that have at least three wins and have
won. That's a great
won.
Observation. That is a great observation.
And the fact that they're actually a much more experienced bunch. Serengeti Empress, Restless Rider, Reflect, Jaywalk, Bellafina are all making their fifth career starts. And the boys are not polished, but Maniwa has made five starts. Nick's Go has made four, and Well Defined has made four. Nobody else, that's it. Only those have made four starts, and then you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You got another 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that have made three starts. So the fillies, this is a group that collectively have won a lot of races. That should make this a lot of fun. This we can look forward to this race.
Yeah, it's one of the Breeders' Cups I'm definitely looking forward to the most. I mean, because I've been following these fillies, like I say, I go back with Restless Rider, clear back to the debutante. And but then this Bellafina has emerged here in California, and then when you see that Serengeti Empress, you know, just like I say, win by a pole, this Jaywalk, what she did last time, I mean, my goodness, that was very impressive. So, that's a really excellent observation you make. I mean, in terms of the fact that, you know, these fillies are proven to the extent that to win these multiple races like that versus the boys, where it's a little more sketchy because they're not as experienced.
Yeah, John, what going to have to wrap up? But what category, what division are you doing in the betting guide?
No, I've never been. I've always been in the Triple Crown betting guides, but not in the Breeders' Cup because we've had so many Breeders' Cups at Santa Anita.
Oh, at Santa Anita, yeah, that's true.
I can't tax myself to throw that onto the pile too. So not doing that. But of course, since you and I talk now, we've got the news that Enable is coming, so that's big news. You know, I'll tell you this, Steve, and it probably isn't going to happen. But you know, if I were the Gosden and Judmont, I sure would be tempted to run Enable in the Classic. And maybe I'm just being a goofball here or whatever.
Yeah, they're not doing that.
I know, but I'm telling you why. Because you look at that race that she ran. She, unlike Roaring Lion, at least is running a race that wasn't on the turf, for starters. And I think it would be easier for her to back up from the mile and a half to the mile and a quarter. And we're back to what we've discussed, that this is not a Breeders' Cup Classic that where we've got, you know, somebody in here to scare the pants off of you. So I'm just saying what I would do if I had her. Because think of what that would do to her legacy and what that would do. I mean, you know, and like you say, they're not going to do it. But I'm just saying, I'm throwing that out there that, boy, if I had her, I sure would be. I'd be beyond tempted. That's probably what I would do with her. And the reason I say that, you just go back and watch that race on the all, what they call the all weather, but I call it synthetic, because we had what was supposedly an all weather track at Santa Anita that every time it rained we'd have to cancel the card. So I don't know how you can call it all weather. It'd rain and we couldn't race. But you know, this Enable to me, I mean, there's enough angles there for her that, you know, just think of what that would mean. I mean, it would remind me of what All Along did when she won the ARC and then came over to the United States and won the Canadian International and the Turf Classic. You know, she did that, and the Washington, D.C., I mean, where she was the horse of the world. I mean, Enable already is considered one of the all-time greats, but boy, that would boost her stock even more. So, but like you say,
Roaring Lion.
I admitted when I said it to you, I'd probably be in goofy.
Yeah, Roaring Lion is running. It seems in the classic.
Yeah, I would switch him. I'd put him in the him in the turf and run her in the classic.
Their intention appears to be, as reported yesterday, appears to be the classic with him. He'll be cross-entered in the turf too, but they are seemingly a go for the classic, complicating that more. No, agreed.
Yeah,
agreed. John, I got to get up, John. I got to get to Mike Welch here. I'm running out of time.
Very good, Steve.
Take a break. Our last, Mike Welch, next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. Mike Welch will join us. Mike, of course, a long relationship, years with Rick Violette. Mike, of course, already at Louisville. And the clock ain't going on in the mornings, but we'll have plenty of time to do that with Mike starting Monday from Churchill Downs. Right now, though, Mike Welch, like so many that knew Rick Violette well, Mike, just really a sad circumstance that has everybody kind of at a loss. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I there's probably not much more I could add to what I'm sure has already been said about Rick. I mean, you know, for me, I mean, obviously it's a huge loss to the industry, but, you know, for me it was a personal loss as well. Like you said, we go back a long time, all the way back to Suffolk Downs in Boston, pretty much when Rick was just starting out his training career. Actually, I think I knew him before he was, you know, obviously knew him before he even started out his training career. He was an exercise rider and an assistant trainer. I remember he worked at Mila Lane back then, up at Rockingham for a while. I was good friends with, you know, his girlfriend at the time and my wife at the time were close. You know, it's just a horrible thing. It's just so sad.
The toughest, one of the toughest aspects of this has been that the, you know, this late stage of the illness that kind of set upon him and whatever other complications, it really, very few people were aware of how quickly things had gone south. And so I know a lot of people feel just bereft that they, you know, that they, having spent the summer around Rick and seemingly doing well, and then, you know, to have him kind of just snatched away, that part, I think people are having a tough time coming to grips with that.
Yeah, I mean, it just happened so quickly. I mean, I remember about 2 weeks before the end of the Saratoga meet, Rick actually hosted a dinner party for, God, it had to be at least 15 people. He cooked everything. I mean, I don't know if people knew that he loved to cook, and he was a terrific cook. I mean, he had me over a couple of times over the years for Thanksgiving with his family, and of course he did all the cooking, and I mean, major cooking too. I mean, not just cook a turkey and you know, throw some green beans on. I mean, he cooked like a 5-course meal, and this night, I mean, it was just it was incredible. You know, it was back at 2 months ago. I remember last year he had Andy Belfiore and myself, my fiancé, over to his house to watch. He was an avid Boston sports fan. He loved the Patriots and Red Sox too. And he had us over. It was for the Jacksonville game, and he cooked a 3-course, 4-course meal that was worthy of any 5-star restaurant. It was the best spare ribs I've ever had, to tell you the truth. And you know, he was doing well. I mean, we went out to dinner with him closing night at Saratoga, and he was looking forward to the Gold Cup, and, you know, talking about the possibility of the Breeders' Cup, and you know, the chances of maybe, you know, if he had won both being horse of the year. And it was just, you know, a shock from that point. Not even that point, I mean, it was still several weeks later before you know, things started going badly. And then, like you said, it just happened pretty quickly the last couple of weeks.
For you, we had Dave yesterday, and Charlie Hayward's been with us, and Andy Serling, Alan Foreman, Rich Migliori, tomorrow Pat Kelly, Joe Applebaum, and Jerry Bailey, and everybody has their own interesting, you know, ties, and of course, you know, all the business dealings, Charlie, you know, alongside Rick, you know, during, you know, Naira franchise scenarios and all the those kinds of issues. For you, it was really the mix of, you know, when he would come to Florida and I suppose those early days in New England, just reporting on the horses. It was so easy to root, and you mentioned Andy Belfiore, of course, the executive director of NYTHA, and her basically being shoulder to shoulder with Rick. I would have loved Andy to visit, and maybe at some point when she's able to talk about it. It's so hard for her right now. Teresa Gennaro, another that was you know, became very close to Rick and is just completely broken up over it. You know, there's so many people that that just had a nice relationships with Rick, professional and social and racetrack. It's just everybody, you know, has to just relate the experiences. I mean, talk about those early racing days with him.
Well, you know, it was just watching him, you know, mature from an exercise rider on up, and you know, just the way he approached everything, so professional and so perfection, you know, meant everything to him, whether he was galloping when he was back galloping horses, and of course when he took over training his own string. And you know, for me too, you know, when as a reporter, and maybe Dave, you know, said the same thing, you know, you have relationships with some of the trainers more so than others. And, you know, you're really not supposed to root in this business, but you can't help, I guess, at times doing that. And, you know, Rick was an easy guy to root for. He was also, you know, as approachable as any of the trainers that we have to deal with on a regular basis. I mean, you know, you could walk into his tack room, and no matter what he was doing, he would stop and, you know, you'd wind up spending 45 minutes there talking not only about whatever you came to talk to him about, but, you know, whether it was other racing-related situations that he was involved in, which there were so many, in which he did such an unbelievable job, or politics, sports, whatever. He was just so easy to talk to. I mean, you know, you knew when you went in there, you better have some time on your hands to spend, because he just was a natural thing. That's the kind of guy he was, you know. He was, you know, informed on about any subject, you know, you could want to talk about too. But I know sports was a passion of his always, and like I said, he was a big New England sports fan, and he was also, you know, he loved to play. I mean, he and I used to play tennis, and I remember we had a basketball league at Suffolk Downs that was, you know, pretty intense, and Rick liked to win. I think there were times he probably liked to win one of those basketball games as much as he wanted to win a race. I mean, that's how what a competitor he was. And he was a pretty good ball player, too. And, you know, whether we played on the same team or against each other, you know, it was always fun. And if you played against him, you know, he wanted to beat your butt off. And then afterwards, you go out and have a beer and something to eat, and it was, you know, your best friends again. But that's how he was. Competitive, but, you know, also a great guy, too. And, you know, I just don't want to say it's really hard to put your feelings in words at this point. It's just hard to believe that he's gone, and it's going to be hard for me to go back, especially to New York. I don't, you know, I'm not there that much, but Saratoga next year, and to walk by that barn and to think that Rick won't be there anymore. I mean, I'm kind of removed from the situation there most of the year, but just thinking the next year at Saratoga, it's going to be a hard thing to do.
Well put. You know, there's certain places where you expect to see certain people. I've got to say, I mean, you've been to Churchill now for several days. I don't know. I arrive Saturday, and I can't imagine what it's going to be like spending the week and not seeing John Asher. I mean, it's that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, two just unbelievable losses in such a short period of time to two people that were not only, you know, so great for the game, but just went, you know, way before their time, and it's hard to believe. I mean, you know, with Rick, you know, I mean, you knew he was fighting this battle, and he did so not only bravely, but you know, with a put a great face forward here through all the suffering he went through. And you know, you had your hopes that he was going to beat this thing, and knowing him, I really thought he was. And it just came as a shock when you know, started to receive word that things weren't working out so well about 3-4 weeks ago. And it's still hard to believe that you know, it's come to this quickly. It's just sad. I mean, it's just it's hard to come to grips with it. It took a couple of days to really sink in that he's gone. And you know,
I don't know what Mellor else there is to say. I mean, it's just a horrible thing for all of us. And, you know, again, you've had enough people on there that probably maybe even said it better than me. But
No, this was not. This is perfect, Mike.
Yeah, it's a huge loss. I'm actually going to fly out of here tomorrow after training and go down for the funeral Thursday and then fly back here Thursday afternoon. I just feel like I have to pay my respects. We went through too much together for too long. So it's going to be a long, hard day on Thursday.
Undoubtedly. Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch, and of course Mike keeping close tabs on the work in the morning at Churchill, and we'll get to that with Mike starting next Monday. Mike, I appreciate this. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks, Steve.
Mike Welch, folks. And of course, earlier, Andy Serling and Charlie Hayward, John White. Yeah. Back with you tomorrow. We'll do a third day of appreciations of Rick, as well as get ready for the release of the pre-entries. And you know, that Roaring Lion coming up, it's going to be very interesting because he's got no points. It'll be interesting to see how they're going to handle that. Right now, it's an overflow field for the Plassey. And going to be that's going to be tricky. We'll see. Replay 6 to 9. Visit the website, archive, podcast, stream, and we'll talk to you in the morning. Good luck if you're playing today. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Breeders' Cup is just around the corner, and ExpressBet is your way to bet the top prep races from around the world. Santa Anita, Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, ExpressBet has them all. And not only can you get your bets in online or on your smartphone or tablet with ExpressBet, you can also watch the races from most tracks in crystal clear high definition. Ready to get started? Sign up for an ExpressBet account today to receive a $500 welcome bonus. That's $500 cash in your pocket that you can use to bet the Breeders' Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to get started. Think you have what it takes to play in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and win your share of $1 million in prizes? Then head to ExpressBet to register. The BCBC is the country's biggest live handicapping tournament with ExpressBet. You can get in on the action without leaving home. Don't have an ExpressBet account? No worries. Sign up today and receive up to a $500 welcome bonus. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. When prohibited, National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.